The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Thank you, Hugh Hewitt. I am Kurt Schlichter. I am guest host here at the Relief Factor Studio in beautiful Southern California. Who am I? I am senior columnist for townhall.com. I am a noted Los Angeles trial lawyer. I'm a retired United States Army colonel. I am the author of the new conservative action novel, The Split, which is the number one military thriller on Amazon, or at least it was last night before I went to sleep at about 6 o'clock in the evening because I had to get up at dark 30 to be here delivering the news to you. There's only one piece of news today, folks. Mask insanity. Let's just go to that desiccated old weirdo in the White House. Cut number one.
Well, if you notice, a lot of places people don't have to wear masks. Let's get that straight. The places where people have gotten vaccinated, where we have a high vaccination rate, people do not have to wear masks at all.
Record scratch. Cut number seven.
I've said from the beginning that we will be guided by the science. So here's what the science tells us. On Tuesday, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, announced its new mask recommendation in parts of the country where COVID cases are substantially high, where people didn't get vaccinated, which they define as 50 new cases for every 100,000 people in a week. The CDC recommends you wear a mask when you're in public and indoors, like work or in a grocery store. That's true for both the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. Why? Because even if you've been fully vaccinated and protected from severe illness from COVID-19, you could have the Delta variant in your system and spread it to someone who isn't vaccinated. We need to wear a mask to protect each other and to stop the rapid spread of this virus as we work to get more people vaccinated. And I hope all Americans who live in areas with substantial or high case rates will follow the mask guidance that's being laid down by the CDC. I certainly will, and I have, because this is one of those areas in Washington. And at my decision, in my direction, all federal personnel and visitors to federal buildings will have to do the same thing. As I said from the beginning, a mask is not a political statement. It's about protecting yourself and protecting others. Masking is one defense against the spread of COVID-19. But make no mistake, vaccines are the best defense against you getting severely ill from COVID-19. The very best defense.
Then why are we walking
around? Do you want to know how we put this virus behind us? Well, I'll tell you how. We need to get more people vaccinated.
Oh, shut up. Just shut up. Okay? I'm so tired of this guy, folks. I am so tired of these people. You got to wear a mask. You can't wear a mask, but you need to be vaccinated. But it doesn't matter if you're vaccinated. Cut number two. Let's see what the hell he's saying now.
Some of you were with me yesterday when I was up in Lehigh Valley. Didn't have to wear a mask there. Don't have to mask if you come home to Delaware with me. I know you love doing that. But you don't have to wear a mask. The places people are probably going to have to wear masks in those communities where the high rate of unvaccinated stays high and they don't move. They don't move to getting vaccinated. But I think you're going to find the patience of businesses and the patience of a lot of other people running thin. Because the fact is, if you had high vaccination rates, we wouldn't be in this spot right now.
Oh, but cut number four.
Maybe the best way to start is in a significant part of the country, you wouldn't have to take one of these off. You don't have to put one on. Like in my home state of Delaware, where I live in New Castle County, where I was yesterday in Pennsylvania, because people got vaccinated. They got vaccinated. They don't need a mask when the vast majority of people got vaccinated.
Yeah, I got vaccinated. Then I tied an onion to my belt, which was the style of the day. Here's how much baloney this is. I am struggling, folks, here on the Hugh Hewitt radio program to maintain my FCC compliance in the face of this tsunami of bull droppings that our alleged president is producing. Even CNN, even Jake Tapper had to say, no. Cut number three.
Biden seemed to suggest that in Newcastle, Delaware, where his home is, the vaccination rates are high, and that's why he didn't have to wear a mask there.
Is
that
accurate?
It's not true.
That's not the case. The reason he did not have to wear a mask when he went there the other day is because they had a moderate level of transmission, not substantial or high, which are the two levels, which is also confusing because I don't think most people know which area they live in. It changes as they update the guidance. So I just think it raises a lot of questions. And there at the end, you saw the president grow quite animated because he was asked about what he did say not that long ago, that if you have been vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. He was saying what we've heard from a lot of health officials, which is they are working on a rolling basis with changing science and data and evidence here. And clearly, the level of concern is real about the Delta variant because he said cases are going to go up. We have not heard that from him in a very long time. So,
well, what did we hear from him originally? Cut number 12.
Just a few hours ago, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the CDC announced that they are no longer recommending that fully vaccinated people need wear masks. This recommendation holds true whether you are inside or outside. I think it's a great milestone, a great day.
I think this is an utter abomination. I think this is ridiculous. I think it's going to cost the Democrats a lot in 2022. Yeah, they were already on their way to failure through the structural problems that come with a midterm election and that come with the fact that the Republicans, I think, are going to show some intestinal fortitude and gerrymander the hell out of the states they control. But this, telling people, hey, you go get the vaccine, get yourself injected with this mystery drug, you'll be fine, everything will be groovy, you don't have to wear a thong around your pie hole, and then suddenly, yeah, you do, even though you're not going to get the disease. And if you get the disease, it's not even going to be that bad. And you need to do it to protect the people who didn't get the vaccine, who are apparently the worst people on earth, and they're all those Fox viewers. Even though Fox viewers don't make up the huge percentage of people who are going, government coming in telling me to take a drug, not buying it. Okay, many people in the minority community, for good reason, are suspicious when the government comes and says, I got an injection for you. If you've ever heard of the Tuskegee experiment, where the government allowed rural black men from Alabama to suffer with syphilis for 40 years because they wanted to study the effects of syphilis, even though we're well aware of the effects of syphilis and always have been. A couple injections of penicillin could have saved these guys and the people they spread it to. So you ask why some people are vaccine hesitant. History of government abominations like the Tuskegee experiment, a dark stain on the pages of America's history. But also, when you've got this desiccated old weirdo up there saying, yay, you don't have to wear a mask anymore because you got the vaccine. And then he turns around and it's, yeah, you got to wear a mask even if you had a vaccine. And there's no recognition that he's changed. It's like they don't owe us an explanation. It's just wake up in the morning, find out what your instructions are, and forget whatever happened before. And there's a cut somewhere, and I'll find it for you, where Peter Ducey asks, hey, Mr. President, did you say we don't have to wear a mask? Did you say that? No, I didn't say that. Never happened. East Asia was never at war with Oceania. Now, look, I understand if you're a Democrat and you assume all your supporters are idiots. I get that. Democrats understand their own base, but they don't understand us because we remember, folks. We know what we've seen. If you wanted to create an environment for vaccine hesitancy, and I actually took the vaccine, even though I had the disease, for reasons that had to do with my personal situation in consultation with conservative doctors. So I'm not an anti-vaxxer. If you want to create vaccine hesitancy, this is what you do. You lie to people. You lie to people and you refuse to be accountable. You lie to people and refuse to admit. You change your story and don't be transparent. That's what they're doing. That's what this desiccated old freak's doing. I'm raging here on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter, unmasked and free and unleashed. Stick around for more.
Jordan, and even the Jordan River has bodies floating, but you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Oh, yeah. The dulcet tones of Barry McGuire from 1960-something, Eve of Destruction. Also, the title of a new article by a great friend of the show and a fellow of Jerry Hendricks. How you doing, Jerry?
Good morning. I'm doing just fine. And that didn't sound at all like the Clash or the Ramones. So I'm glad that I was able to inject some other alternative forms of music into the show bumper series.
Well, look, we had an exchange last night, Jerry Hendricks, on the Twitters, where I offered you a punk cover version of Eve of Destruction, which you rejected unequivocally. You said, I will have nothing to do with this. Before we talk about your articles, which I think are extremely important about the devastated United States military, as you know, we're going through another seizure of COVID mania. We had Lloyd Austin, our purported Secretary of Defense, coming down the stairs on an airplane on some foreign visit, wearing a mask and a face shield and fist bumping people, and it was just ridiculous. What is the effect of this mask mania, this COVID pandemic paranoia, both on our military personnel and the perception of our military by our many, many enemies?
Well, yesterday I noticed that that video of Secretary Austin coming off with the mask and the shield, and of course there was a lot of derision that went along with that at the time. And then I subsequently did see that was actually the local government requirement there. I believe that was in Vietnam when he did that. So there was a local standard that had to be met there. But it didn't.
This is an American. This is the American Secretary of Defense. He should do what he damn well pleases. And that that in itself is an important message. When you start conforming to things that are undignified. That kind of shows submission, doesn't it?
It was Vietnam, and we're very eagerly hoping to build our relations back with Vietnam after the last 50 years of history with them. They're going to be a key ally and partner dealing with China going forward. So, but that was a local standard. But you know, to come back to where we're at here in the United States, I'm hearing that we're looking at masks back inside the large public gathering areas, like the Pentagon, although I did see a notice last night that said that the Pentagon will ask military members if they've been vaccinated, and then perhaps not require those who have been vaccinated to wear the mask, et cetera. I think there's a lot of confusion going on. I mean, Kurt, you went to Desert Storm. I deployed to Saudi Arabia shortly after you did. And, you know, you remember those big anthrax vaccines that we had that left these huge lumps in our arms for years. You know, afterwards, you know, vaccination is sort of a standard, but we were all given the chance to say no. And if you said no, you left. You left the military service at that time. You know, I think that the vaccination issue, I've taken a lot more vaccinations than most people. Me and my family have made
me and you
to take our vaccinations. But, you know, it's a personal choice, and I respect that as a personal choice.
I do recall the anthrax thing. My job at the time, running heavily armed car wash, was chemical, nuclear, biological warfare. I took the at least the first anthrax, and I didn't have a problem with it. I do have a problem with his COVID vaccine, but in the sense that I don't think it should be mandated. I just don't think the threat's there to a force that, at least purportedly, is full of physically fit folks. And you have to be physically fit to fight. And your recent articles have pointed out that maybe the United States military is not as ready to fight as it should be. And I got to tell you, I read them and I was scared. Tell us a little about your latest.
Well, the Eve of Destruction essay, which I did in National Review, took on this report that came out from Representatives Scott and Gallagher, Crenshaw, and Banks, where they looked at these interviews of a series of about 70-plus current and former naval officers and enlisted, looking at the fighting culture of the Navy Surface Force. And I read the interview or the final report very carefully because this was they're covering the time period which I served, the last three decades. And there was nothing in the report that surprised me. It showed that we had a decline in sort of the fighting spirit, the ethos of the surface force, that the maintenance and the training requirements associated with the surface Navy had declined or been compromised, and that these contributed to both the two collisions in 2017, as well as the surrender of the two Riverine boats in the Arabian Gulf.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
Yeah, the burning of the Bonhomme Richard, you know, which is the loss of a $1 billion asset that will cost us $3 billion to replace. And by the way, the Navy announced yesterday that that fire was caused by an act of a seaman apprentice, an E-2, apparently was the cause of the start, and court-martial charges have been preferred against that individual. So there's an issue within the surface warfare community, and the thing that was interesting about the report is that it said, hey, look, these issues didn't exist in the naval aviation community or in the Navy submarine community, which have very clear standards for training that are associated with them, but the surface force had lost those standards.
Well, Jerry, as I understand it, Jerry Hendricks, and you know, you were a Navy captain, so you understand the importance of this. They were commissioning surface warfare officers, that is, the people who drive boats. My dad was one, and they send them out to the Navy, the big Navy, not without any additional training, with a bunch of videos, and they're supposed to learn on the job. And apparently, that has been a utter disaster.
Yeah, so in 2003, in some sort of a strange drive for efficiency, which I ascribe to sort of the impact of Deming's total quality management on the Navy, which there was a huge move at that time to make the Navy more efficient. And efficiency just means lower cost. But, yeah, we used to have a six-month school in Newport, Rhode Island that all young junior officers who are ship drivers would go to learn their basic skills. And we took that school away, and we had these officers report to their ships cold, but we gave them 23 CDs where they would fire up their computer, pop them in, and start reading their CDs while they're doing on-the-job training driving ships. And we found that was utterly a disaster, that, you know, training and readiness fell off on these ships. The COs who got those young JOs that had no training were burdened with these larger wardrooms of untrained officers. And there was just less and less time to actually become good at it. And what's odd is that those JOs in 2003, well, those are your commanding officers of the Navy surface ships today.
Oh, great.
And yeah, exactly. So you're seeing this downstream impact of these previous decisions at this time when we all thought, hey, I can find a way to do more with less. And so that's what we asked of the surface community until essentially we broke it. And that's what we recognized in 2017. Now, it's important to understand, I think we've recognized that and we're beginning to repair that damage. We're trying to make sure that the ships are maintained, that there's time for training, and junior officers are, in fact, going to sort of grounds.
Well, Jerry, I've got to disagree with you here. I heard a CNO, Admiral Gilday, get up there and defend squandering valuable time on ridiculous faculty room indulgences like Ibram Kendi's idiotic books. He didn't look like a combat officer to me. He looked like a political hack, and it was a disgrace. And I, you know, frankly, my feeling is fire everybody 07 and up and invite a few back, because it, I think it is that bad. We have ships slamming into each other. We have ships catching fire. We have junior officers surrendering their command without a shot. And I don't see relief from the bottom to the top of the chain of command afterwards, because if it was President Schlichter, I'd relieve everybody. I'm furious because I think, and I'm just picking on the Navy. I could pick on my beloved Army, too. It's, you know, General Milley's no prize. But look, I think for decades we glided on the amazing legacy of surface warfare from World War II. And it came back in the 80s under Reagan in the Cold War. And you're absolutely right. It has declined. And I don't think the present leadership, which is always talking about our excellent military, it ain't excellent anymore. I think we lose to China. What do you think?
Well, I'm not going to get into whether we lose to China. I'm very concerned about it, which is why I wrote in the other essay just a couple of weeks earlier on the Davidson window, where we're having this challenge that, you know, Admiral Phil Davidson, the retiring Indo-Pacific commander, made the point that he thinks that China is going to jump ugly over Taiwan within the next 6 years.
Wouldn't you?
And so,
I mean, if you were Xi, wouldn't you?
I mean, I think he gets past his Olympics, where he wants everybody to come and pay homage, and, and he makes money off from it. But we get to the other side of the Olympics, and I think it's game on, much as what happened with Putin. And after his Olympics, and he did his invasion of Georgia, I think that we're looking at a very similar pattern there. And so, again, this comes to, you know, another friend of the show, Representative Mike Gallagher, keeps talking about, hey, Battle Force 2025, you know, what are we going to do to grow the Navy and make us more combat ready in the long term, you know, 2045, but what do we do in the here and now to deter Xi Jinping from trying to invade and occupy Taiwan, or for that matter, whatever the hell else he wants to do?
Well, that's Jerry Hendricks, you're absolutely right. Look, Taiwan is already a huge tactical problem anyway, in the sense that it's right off the coast of China and it's far away from us. And we don't have a lot of bases really close. We don't have any bases on Taiwan. So we're operating forward. And the Chinese are focusing quite rightly strategically on area denial. That is keeping us out of range of Taiwan to be able to have effects on the enemy coming in. Combine that with the fact that the Taiwanese have not done what they should do, which is turn into a little Switzerland where there's a rifle in every house. And the minute the Chinese land, they're going to get shot at from behind every blade of grass. So I see a huge tactical and strategic problem, and I don't see a military that's taking it seriously right now. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think that we have to increase our defense spending. That's what I said. You know, there was a commission that came out in 2018 that said you got to increase defense spending 3-5% year over year for essentially the next 20 years. And we're not doing that. This last defense budget was disappointing in the fact it was sort of unserious. We were only going to build 8 new Navy ships when really we need to be building at least 12 a year.
Now you've depressed me, Jerry Hendricks, but go read his stuff at National Review. It's important. And it's important that you keep listening here on the UU radio program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter. Stick around.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
I am Kurt Schlichter here at the Relief Factor studio at O-Dark 30. I am senior columnist for townhall.com. I am a noted Los Angeles trial lawyer. I am a retired United States Army colonel. I am the author of the
number one military thriller on Amazon. At least it was last night. The Split, the sixth in a Kelly Turnbull series of conservative action novels that feature guns, liberal bashing, and more guns. You need to go get it. And I've got a guy with some eerie parallels to me coming on. He's a United States Marine. He is the author of the Logan West series of novels. His latest is Amira. We'll talk about that. Matt Bentley, how are you? Let me give you a briefing.
Yeah, I'm doing really well.
Here's where we're going, because you're a military guy. We're going to make this clear. First, I'm going to talk to you a little about Iraq and your feelings, because you were at Fallujah, your feelings about our final pullout. Second, masks and the military and morale. We're going to talk about that. And then we're going to clean up with a mirror. We all clear? Ready to go?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm all in.
All right. First of all, you served our country as a United States Marine in Fallujah. The president has announced that we are finally pulling out and ending combat operations there after about 19 years. How do you feel about that?
I think it's long overdue. At some point, when we go into these countries, right or wrong, you know, obviously looking in hindsight, we went in for the wrong reasons. It's kind of funny, you know, I've changed my mentality about it. When I went, I was enthusiastic. I couldn't wait to get over there. I couldn't wait to put my training into practice. And by the time I left, I saw what a mess it was. And I was there from 2006 to 2007 before the surge started. So I was in Al Anbar province when it was not a good place to be. And now here we are all these years later. It's long overdue. I mean, that's just the harsh reality of it. It's just like in Afghanistan. These people have to stand on their own two feet at some point because it's not our job to prop up their governments. And that's just the way I personally feel. You know, it's just time to move on.
Well, Matt, I served in Desert Storm. Then after 9/11, I served in Kosovo. I wasn't in Afghanistan. I wasn't in Iraq 2.0. But I want you and every veteran of Iraq and Iraq 2.0 and Afghanistan to know that when we criticize the strategic leadership, we're not criticizing the guys at the tactical level. You guys were outstanding, brave, courageous. And America owes you a great debt. You should be proud of what you guys did. And I know you are, and I know you're proud of your Marines because we talk pretty much every day.
Absolutely. And the reality is, and I've actually said that to people, it doesn't matter how it actually ended, whether we won or lost. All that matters is whether or not you did your job when you were over there. That's what it really comes down to.
Well, look, as a Marine, you were a leader. You led young Americans in war and peace. Now you're observing what's happening with this mask mandate, and the vaccine mandate within the military. How do you think that's going to affect morale, which is already taking a hit in light of this CRT nonsense?
I'm sure it's going to take another hit. How big of a hit, I honestly don't know. I was arguing about this last night, not really arguing, discussing with a couple of our peers last night on Twitter about it. The reality is, and what makes this different, you know, when you go into the military, you get all kinds of vaccines, left
yes.
and right. I lost track of how many vaccines I received when I was.
We're immune to everything, Matt Bentley.
Yes. Except nonsense. And the reality is this vaccine is different. It still hasn't been officially approved by the FDA. So there are people who are going to be resistant to it, and now they're forcing them to take this vaccine. I'm vaccinated. That was a personal choice. That's because I'm high risk because I have lung damage from burn pit exposure from my deployment to Iraq. Now, you have a lot of young military guys who are going to go and gals who are going to go, wait a second, I'm healthy, I'm fit. Why should I have to take this vaccine that could have all of these potentially adverse long-term side effects? So, you know, it's a toss-up. I don't know what's going to happen. I personally also, regarding the mask mandate, I think that's kind of absurd. And the reason being, we were supposed to get this vaccine so that we don't have to wear masks. Apparently, 98% of the cases, they keep telling us every day, 98% of the new cases are all unvaccinated people. So then why are people being forced to wear masks again? They're going to tell you it's because of the breakthrough cases and because of how transmissible the Delta variant is. Okay, that's fine, but I still think it shouldn't be a mandate. I think it should be up to people to make that choice. And on the last note, I'm now seeing that they want to lock down the country again in a few weeks. I saw somebody post that that's what they think the White House is going to do.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
No, that's just going completely off the deep end. At some point, people have to go, okay, if you're not vaccinated, you're the ones at risk. But if they're going to try and lock down the country again, destroy what economy we do have, force kids to go virtual to cause more psychological damage on kids, no, enough is enough. This has to actually stop. Well, I just don't know how it's going to stop.
Well, look, I think it's going to need the Republicans to stop them, and I rang about that on Monday at Town Hall. Everybody should go read my columns every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I know Matt Bentley does. Look, Matt, in the military, the fact that a lot of soldiers are not listening and not believing their senior leadership is a huge indictment of the level of trust our troops have in their senior leaders. I think that's kind of mirrored on the outside. Normal Americans look at Joe Biden and, he's changing up his positions on masks, the way a Wellesley sophomore girl from a Connecticut suburb changes her preferences during the senior year. It is, when I was a commander, I needed to establish that bond of trust. Ideally, it would be, hey, Colonel Schlichter and Sergeant Major Flannery say that I ought to take the vaccine. They're taking it. I'm going to take it. That's what you want. And that's not what's happening. I think it's saying our troops are looking at their leadership and saying, I don't trust them. And if you look at what happened with Milley and Gilday and all the rest of them and their garbage CRT fetish, I think it's a very dangerous situation where the troops do not trust their leaders.
Well, I agree. For years, I've always said political correctness destroys everything it touches.
Yes.
And this whole focus on wokeness and diversity and inclusion, when you're actually taking away from focusing on real strategic and tactical level missions of war, of course, the troops are going to then have complete no confidence in their leaders. And that's what we're seeing. So it's like you said, when there's no leadership, there is no morale. It's just the way it is in the military. But this administration and these current generals and flag officers in the military, they've opened that Pandora's box by being on social media, by attacking journalists they disagree with. They did this, and now it's the bed that they've made.
When you see one of these general officers get on Twitter and start jumping in as a general officer into a political debate, do you have the same reaction which I do, which is, what the hell?
Absolutely. I just remember that.
It's mind-boggling. You just don't do that.
Nope. And in fact, that was one of the things as a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps that was beaten into my head is it is not your job to have an opinion on political issues when you are a Marine officer.
Yeah.
And it was really that simple. It's your job to wage war and destroy the enemy.
I remember when I was still in the reserves and I would go on active duty. I would stop tweeting for 2 weeks because I wasn't Kurt Schlichter anymore. I was Colonel Schlichter, and Colonel Schlichter doesn't jump into politics. And then when I get out, I would participate. And there are a number of reservists who are, in Congress. So you can do that, but you don't do it on day. It never occurred to me to do it.
Nope. No, it's a brave new world. And
a crummy
sure
one.
Where this world is going.
I like the old one where we won wars. It's been 30 years. I remember I was there. Matt, let's shift up. You are right. You have just put out a new novella in the world of Logan West, in its the Logan West universe. Tell us a little about Amira and where we can find it.
Absolutely. Amira is available on Amazon. I wrote this book. My first four books in the Logan West series were from Simon & Schuster. I have one of the fan favorite characters named Amira Cerrone. She is actually an Italian-Ethiopian former assassin for the CIA, and I got more fan mail about this. Yeah, exactly. I got more fan mail about this character, so I started out writing this short story turned into a lengthy novella. And
well, go get Amira on Amazon and everything by Matt Bentley. Stick around here on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. We got a lot more
Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on relieffactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because relieffactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because relieffactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin Resveratrol Omega, temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains, temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains, and you can't do better than that 3-week starter pack, $19.95.